My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Kids, happy 2023. Do you like wrestling? Well, we like wrestling too. On what is usually the biggest week in wrestling, this is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins, along with Chris Novembrino, who is live from Albuquerque, New Mexico now. Congratulations.
Yes, I am. I love it here. I'm in my new home of Albuquerque, New Mexico. This is week one of officially living here. This is the first podcast I'm officially living here. I got my last carload of stuff off the car on Monday. I got onto all of the apps and the Craigslist and web pages and found myself a band to rehearse with the next day. And I have 3 gigs this weekend already. Life is moving very quickly. I'm getting settled into the new place. The cats love the new place. I love the new place.
I've been here 15 minutes. They've already elected me mayor. I don't know what's going on around here.
Right. No, I feel like at the current pace I am going, realistically, I think, Jeff, within about 5 years, I can be the senator from the state. One of them.
Can you name the senators from New Mexico right now?
No, right now.
Okay, there we go.
No. Right now, I am classic dumb citizen who cannot name any elected officials in their state. I need to fix that, because I think it's important that everyone at least knows like who your governor is. For example, if you need to get a pardon, you should know who that person is.
You're literally not worrying about the government.
Right now the government has not been worried about yet. I do have to go to the DMV and stuff. I'm in the process of getting, I have my documents and stuff, but I am waiting for my birth certificate actually is at my parents' house and being sent to me. So anyways, I will learn who the government officials are. I will get a driver's license, okay. But I have 3 gigs. I'm getting settled in.
Taste for mango salsa, which is all I think. Bobby Flay, when he does Southwestern New Mexico cooking, it's nothing but, I'm just going to add peach mango salsa and blue corn tortilla chips to everything. And then it's all of a sudden it's Southwestern flair.
I'm out here in New Mexico. It's red chili and green chili. Chili capital of the world. We're also number one in nuclear weapons. So just remember the next time you hear about New Mexico, that when New Mexico leaves the country, we will nuke the other 49 states and take all their assets. Something to think about, Jeff.
Can you start with Vermont?
maybe, but Texas is right next door.
Yeah, but I don't like Vermont. Anyway.
It's convenient.
It's too cold there.
We can talk about Texas some other time.
We were having a nice, enjoyable end of 22 vacation, kind of, you know, a few days off, relaxing. We go into this first week of January, which is always, oh, look, Wrestle Kingdom and the big Japanese shows, and we're on the road to WrestleMania, and AEW is starting to make moves, et cetera, et cetera. And then this afternoon, Thursday, Vince McMahon kicks in the door and yells, Leroy Jenkins. The Wall Street Journal at 4 o'clock Eastern today drops an article. Vince McMahon has communicated to the board of directors that unless he has direct involvement as executive chairman from the outset of a strategic review, he will not support or approve any media rights deal or sale. That means, in other words, he wants back in. And according to the Fightful version of this article, Vince McMahon has elected himself and former co-presidents and directors Michelle Wilson and George Berrios, last seen heading the IPO of Bowlero, which actually has gone up 25% since they did that, which shocks me to death. But he's bringing them with him, and it will require three current directors to vacate their positions. Vince McMahon has majority voting power and has reported he's forcing his way back into the company to oversee a media rights deal and or force a sale. He said he would block any attempts to do either without him. He sent out a press release stating that he would collaborate with the current management team, but did not directly address a potential return to creative. Fightful reached out to WWE in an official capacity, as well as the author of the Wall Street Journal, to gain more info, but hadn't heard back. But in an unofficial capacity, ain't nobody know nothing. They were all panicking over in WWE when this dropped. May you live in interesting times. Also in the article notes that this bringing him back would require board approval, and the board has wrote back to him saying they weren't supporting his return. Oh, it gets more interesting and interesting. And I could just see that first meeting, George, Michelle, Vince walk in, look around, go, you know what? Steph, Hunter, Nick, thank you for your service. Chris, what do you make of all this craziness?
That last note is the most interesting to me, which is that they do not have the board support on this.
Right.
The other interesting note to me, because I'm kind of going for the most interesting parts of the story first, is he is either there to oversee a sale or a new media deal, which a new media deal is a clever way of saying, I'm just back, baby. I have chosen to not, in my weird mentality, lose. And I am once again in control of WWE, even if it's bad for WWE in the end of it.
See, the sale part is what interests me.
But he also might not be. We might be focusing on the wrong side of the story. But here's
how I think it coalesces. I think Vince is of the mentality, I built this. And if I ain't running this, you ain't running this either, people that I know. I will sell this thing out from under you, and I will let them do with it what they will, but you can't have it. See, it's far more.
I almost feel like he won't be happy unless it went out of business entirely. Like some weird part of him needs
to so too.
By his hands.
Yeah, and as long as it's not him putting it out of business necessarily, he's fine with that. Or you know, maybe he wants to put it out of business so nobody else can have it.
Right. No, that's it's weird. It's I don't want anyone else to have this.
These are my toys. But it's also, you know, I think it goes very much into his psyche. Like, he is very big into thinking he was a Horatio Alger story. Rags to riches. Like, oh, I took this and I built it all up from scratch and I never had any help. And, you know, when he was really kind of given a major territory by his father and then screwed all his father's friends out of it when he did national expansion. But he's always thought of himself as, you know, the bootstrapping. I worked hard, got to where I was for, you know, every single stupid self-help book in the business section, you know, in a pamphlet is Vince McMahon right now. And what he's saying right now is, well, because you all didn't really earn this, you can't have it. Just like, it's such a weird psychosis to me. Yeah, it's like, well, you know, you had help along the way. You were not just a rugged individualist who built all of this. No matter what you put out there on TV, people helped you along the way. And if you make it in business, you are helped along the way and you get some ins. Or you get, you know, connections and things like that. And he just seems to think that never happened with him.
It's collaborative, right? Like, whether you're talking about Bruno Sammartino, or you're talking about Bob Backlund, or you're talking about Hulk Hogan, or you're talking about Bret Hart, or Shawn Michaels, the people at the top of the company, just to name, like, a few of the main acts, Stone Cold Steve Austin, John Cena.
Those are just the people on TV, not people behind the scenes who helped them.
Right, right. I mean, those are important partnerships that Vince needed to have necessarily in order for him to have business success. All of his business success is in, it's not because of other people. He has no credit at all. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm saying that, like, it is through collaborative relationships. And so often you get these people who have this rugged individualist narrative for themselves. And what they're really forgetting about is there were powerful associations, generative associations along the way, where, like, it is by virtue of that association with someone else that both of y'all were able to thrive. Whether you're talking about a guy like Steve Austin, who went from being Stunning Steve Austin, a mid-card guy in WCW, to being a celebrity by virtue of the association with Vince McMahon. And similarly, Vince McMahon, who was able to take WWF in the 1990s from a struggling promotion, 91, 92, 93, Lex Luger, like, suplexing Yokozuna on the battleship. Like, these are not the brightest days of WWF television. It's only through these generative relationships with Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, Steve Austin, and The Rock that WWE or WWF becomes WWE, the traded company now. It's all about collaboration. There are many things this man misses, but that this one really sticks out in this story to me.
Yeah, I was saying, like, the Grand Wizard and all the people that helped him when he was behind the scenes. But to quote one of my favorite Genesis songs,
Pat Patterson, he definitely, you know, kind of sold up the river a little bit at the end here, right?
Yeah, to quote one of my favorite Genesis songs, Paper Late, you don't have to be nice on the way up because you're not coming down. Yeah. It's so funny because I'm reading a lot of discourse about this. I'm like, wow, this really helps AEW. I'm like, dude, AEW has its own problems. Let's not think that just because one is in trouble, the other one is flying great necessarily. Although they have gone through their turbulence already. But I mean,
also, we already have data for what Vince McMahon running television means for AEW. And yes. While I think if we went and reviewed the data, we could see something like it does help them to the tune of something like 10 to 15%. Like, you know, marginal, but good. It's not like the runway gets cleared and now AEW can get 3 million viewers per week because they're just scooping up all of SmackDown and Raw. Like, no.
I feel for the talent because it's always hard to go to work when you're uncertain of your company's future. And especially the talent that was rehired after Vince fired them.
There was that quiet commentary too that sort of happened in the first couple few weeks with the post Vince era where you could just see everybody had their working boots on and everyone was a little bit more energized.
Yeah, there was like a everybody weight was lifted off of everybody. Yeah. They were having fun.
You could feel them feel unburdened.
Commentary especially just felt like, hey, we can all, you know, we can say things, we can actually be a part of this show as opposed to just, you know, sticking to the script or whatever. We can go with the flow here. We can, you know, have some creativity in what we do. And now, oh, God help us. I think, you know what? I don't think he's going to come back to creative even if he comes. I think he's just going to come there. He's going to sell it out from everybody.
I mean, I think the ghost of Vince will now hang over creative.
Yeah.
We'll see, but I just think, like,
I think there's going to court, to be honest with you. I don't think anything big is going to happen.
Right. Well, I mean, it's going to be really interesting. Does the board fight him on this?
Yeah.
I could see them fight him on this. And also, I don't think he's really considered that, like, this sexual harassment story, they could ramp up pressure on. Like, they can make this more public. They can make him more of
more
an albatross. He's really sort of thinking, well, I've beaten the sexual harassment story. No, the sexual harassment story to this point has not gone national in the way that it could have. It's certainly not impossible to imagine a world where it does.
We took a few extra days off during the holidays, and during that time, former Impact color commentator Don West passed away of cancer. I had to grow to love Don West, Chris, because my first I was one of those people who, when I was in college and I was an insomniac, I'd be flipping channels and there'd be Don West screaming about what a great deal these baseball cards are. You get 400 boxes of Fleer and Dunruss for $25. I can't, you know, that kind of huckster snake oil type of thing for all these sports card collections on the Home Shopping Network or whatever it was. And then he comes to TNA. I'm just like, oh, okay, whatever. But in hearing the commentary right after his death, he really did kind of pave the way for guys like Pat McAfee, who just are excited to be there and kind of fanboying a little bit on the commentary versus doing kind of a more serious role or serious heelish role on there. Look, I'm one who did not like the Don West heel turn on Mike Tenay. I thought that made it very uncomfortable on TV, even if it wasn't real behind the scenes. But any strong thoughts or thoughts in general on Don West?
No, the only thing I could think of when Don West passed is that not too long ago, we had had a conversation about Don West where I feel like you had said what you just said. And I was going to say, and what I said at the time was that I just thought he was a above average guy. We talked about his enthusiasm, that he actually had like a passion for the thing that he was into it. He was legitimately enjoying himself doing it. And you can't fake that. And right. That's the thing that I always liked about West. He clearly wanted to be there when it came to the wrestling stuff. Did he know all the moves? Hell no. There are times where, you know, Don West really
wasn't even a wrestling fan when he got hired.
And then became a wrestling fan. And it just, he had a way, I think, and this came from sales. I think the best salesmen are able to see how a thing can improve somebody's life or whatever and really truly believe that when they're making the pitch. And I think he was able to port that talent onto wrestlers and see how certain wrestlers, especially if they weren't getting in, you know, in his mind, if he could whip up the narrative, like they're just due by, like, you know, the way the world views them or whatever. Amazing Red comes to mind, for example. Like Don West was always really into Amazing Red. You have something like that. And he was able to really just make you believe, like, this guy's a star. Yeah, you know, like, why don't people get it? You know, this guy is a star. You're watching a star right now. I think that there's something to be said for that.
And then we get to the wrestling that has happened in the past week and a half, which is just starting last week, late last week, FTR loses the AAA titles to Dragon Lee and Dralistico. And on the same broadcast, Dragon Lee announces he has signed with NXT. He is the younger brother of Roosh. He's been on once. I believe he lost his mask in a six-man, and they had to cover his face for kind of an angle type thing. But kind of a little shocking because everybody says, hey, they won't treat you well in WWE. But it appears that, according to Dave Meltzer, that people close to him said that NXT would, or WWE would be the better place for him to go compared to AEW. Which is interesting, and also just interesting that they acknowledged it on the television show after FTR had dropped the tag titles to them. And NXT also put out a release about Dragon Lee coming to NXT that same night. Chris, any thoughts?
I think this is a bit, I want to say it's embarrassing. Like the word that comes to mind is embarrassing, in the sense that, like, it's not that like FTR got embarrassed by this, but to not know that you're about to do a belt drop to somebody who's like leaving the company and thus won't even be holding on to the titles is,
I'm wondering if AEW knew. That's the weird thing.
And they hung out. They hung FTR out to dry a little.
Well, FTR was going to lose all their titles anyways.
Right. But they're still thinking, you know, okay.
They're looking at possibly leaving AEW and just hitting the indies for a few years. And mostly this was due to AAA has a deal with AEW, or they have kind of a talent deal. And Dragon Lee's thing is that he can't work New Japan, where he used to work a lot, because of the whole AAA CMLL political issues. So really, WWE is the only place to go other than AEW. And but WWE has never treated luchadors well. They've never treated small guys well. They've never treated flippy guys all that well. Now, they have a place on the card, and you can make a lot of money, and you can stick around a lot long time and make a lot more money if you want. If you're an artiste, if you're somebody who cares about having great matches and being used, it's not the place for you, I don't think. If you just want to survive on a card, take an RKO after doing a fantastic move, and basically be a mid-card geek, it's a great place to go make $300,000 a year.
Yeah. I don't know that I have much more to say than that. I mean, that's always been the terms of WWE, especially for these luchador guys. It helps to be able to have a good command of English language promos.
Yeah.
But even that historically has not been enough to save some of these guys.
Exactly.
From the kiss of death. It's just something that like might give you a better than average fighting chance. And it does seem to track that if you're not good at the English language promo, it is tricky to find a spot. And I would be very worried about that going into the McMahon era or McMahon era part two. I think the changes that we were sort of seeing in terms of presentation for some of these guys in NXT, names can't immediately come to mind. But I do recall that there were some non-native speakers who were getting better presentations last year after Vince. And I don't know that that's going to continue now.
Friday Night SmackDown saw the return of John Cena being able to wrestle on TV for each of the last 30 years. In addition, Charlotte Flair returned, beating Ronda Rousey in 30 seconds after Ronda beat Raquel Rodriguez in what was basically a glorified squash. Chris, any thoughts on how they did this? I hate these angles. They did this with Becky and Bianca too.
When have these when have these like insta squash Daniel Bryan Sheamus sort of things actually worked? There's never been a time where it's been like a hot angle or something. It hasn't gotten people jazzed.
One time. Ultimate Warrior Honky Tonk Man.
Okay. That was how long ago, Jeff?
That was a long time ago.
Jeff.
I'm not going to say, but if you say it never has worked, it's not okay. True. I'm just saying.
So let's, we
Goldberg
have that.
Tends to work a lot. I don't know.
Okay. But like, the Goldberg thing worked, but it's almost more like they built an entire gimmick around that being ultimately the way, you know, that
but they
would have
like
to go.
Doing, I mean, the difference between this and the Sheamus thing, it's more akin to the Becky thing where it's like we reintroduce somebody and they automatically just run through our champion. I'm just like, I hate that. I really do.
Yeah. And Charlotte's just not that interesting.
Yeah, but it looks like, according to some sources, that the WrestleMania lineup, which was originally supposed to be Becky and Ronda, has now changed. And it looks like it's going to be Becky and Rhea. Is the plan for that side of the ledger. Don't know the side of the other ledger that's going to be. I would assume it's Charlotte and Ronda, but we'll see.
Becky and Rhea could be a good program.
Yeah.
Charlotte and Ronda will not be a good program. That's all I have to
Those
say.
Those promos are going to be dreadful.
No, we've seen them run a program before. We know what Charlotte and Ronda's promos against each other look like. They suck.
Yes.
They're not good. They're notably bad. We've talked about this.
Because they're both trying way too hard.
And neither of them have real characters. And Ronda's not really committed to being a heel. And Charlotte's not really a babyface. And you don't really like either one of them. And you kind of hate both of them, but not in a, man, I can't wait to watch these two people I hate fight sort of way. Just more like, you guys are both annoying. I don't like you.
AJ Styles broke his ankle. Looks to be out 6 weeks. Hopes to be back in time for WrestleMania.
I guess he's not winning the Rumble.
Very, very true. Then we get to this week on, just 2 nights ago, Wrestle Kingdom. Sure, you had the Omega Ospreay great match, but what's pertinent to me and my interest? Well, FTR lost the New Japan tag or the IWGP tag team titles to Hiroki Goto and Yoshihashi.
I was going to say, what did Toru Yano do on the
nice court? Well, Toru Yano, I think he appeared on New Year's Dash, and he will be in the King of Pro Wrestling four-way for that. Or that was in a Rumble, I believe. I don't know. I can't be honest with you.
Well, you said you were interested, and I was like, well, that...
Yeah, well, Toru Yano.
Yeah, know, right. I know.
The greatest pro wrestler to come out of Japan in the last 20 years. I don't care what
One of the nation's finest exports, for sure.
He is. But... the artist formerly known as Sasha Banks, a.k.a. Mercedes Moné, or Moné. I don't think she's a French impressionist painter, but it's more of a play on money, made her debut at Wrestle Kingdom. Bailey had flown out there to support her friend. Naomi was there, and look, they're buddies with FTR, so everybody got to take some photos together. Came out, challenged Kairi Sane. That match will happen in San Jose, and tickets to those got a nice little brisk sales out of it. So, yes, Mercedes got her Ribera jacket the other day, too. She is loving the Japan lifestyle. She loves anime. She's a pig in slop right now, and it raises some questions as to whether or not she'll be on her way to AEW or she's going to use this as leverage to WWE. But yeah, she will be working Stardom in what Stardom hopes will be the biggest women's program for their company and giving them a nice shot in the arm.
Yeah, I think that the potential here for Stardom is pretty high. I think this will give them a really nice shot in the arm.
In fairness, the promo wasn't that good, unfortunately. A little bit of culture shock, a little bit of stage fright, a little bit of, I mean, you know, when we watch Sasha, when she puts on the diva kind of attitude, it feels very try hard. It doesn't feel like it fits her. Like she's wearing a costume and she's playing this. A lot of it came up there, and they also botched a move, unfortunately, in there. But I am kind of excited because look, Kairi's great. Sasha's great. Once they get into a match, they're going to practice this thing for a month. It's going to be phenomenal. Now, I think it was obvious when this happened that then chatter started to come over to, well, is she going to be Soraya's partner next Wednesday at the Forum in Los Angeles? They did an angle on Dynamite this week to dissuade that, but they also dropped hints at the same time. Like Britt Baker calling herself the boss. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. I am of the opinion that she is not signed right now. Could be, and it could be a swerve where Sheeta takes out Toni Storm. But overall, I think it's a mistake not to advertise her if she's on the card. And to do a double type of surprise like that, to fool the smarks and to play the internet, is a stupid business move. Do you agree or disagree with that?
Yeah, if you have Sasha Banks, you say you have Sasha Banks.
Yes. Okay, good. I just...
No,
For some reason, everybody's like, well, you know, he could be keeping it as a surprise. I go, why would you do that?
No.
Ticket sales have not been the briskest for the Forum, necessarily. You want people in that building if it's going to happen, so you need to tell them she's going to be in the building. You can't just say, yeah, just allude that somebody we know may be in the building on that night. You know, you don't have to... I mean... You know, they hit the nail on the head, but you at least have to, like, say, yes, right. I have a partner. She's, you can take that to the banks. You know, that kind of But yes, that ends the news portion of this show. There are no sponsors this week, as we haven't heard if any of them are going to actually re-up for the year. So we'll just go into the lazy river of wrestling criticism. Whatever we watched, whatever's on our mind for the week that was, or week and a half that was, we can bring it up right here. Chris, I'm going to start. Did you get a chance? I sent you a link to this. Did you get to see Nakamura and Muta face off?
I did not get a chance to see them. I've been moving.
I understand. So, yeah, I really
did, however, see the post-match thing.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Which part? The Muta part or the Nakamura part?
The Muta part.
Okay, I will give context to that eventually. I enjoyed the match for what it was. Look, Muta has a very special place in my heart and my fandom because he did his excursion mostly in Crockett and became a big star in Crockett. So I mean, he changed the game for the way I looked at wrestling in terms of what guys could do athletically. For a 55-year-old man, or with shot knees, I think 55, I mean, might be 65.
Yeah, I was going to say, is he only 55?
I don't think he's only 55. I think he's 65.
60. Yeah, I think he's 65.
Or something like that.
And, yeah, he's got robot.
I mean, they worked this match well. Yes, they stole the ending from a Best of the Super Juniors match between Bushi and Will Ospreay, but I think they did it better. So there's a bit of a Milton Berle aspect to this where Nakamura basically locked, after taking two missed shots, a red and a green, avoided the black mist by planting one on old Muda and taking the mist out of his mouth and spitting it right back at him. Thought it was creative at the time. Got some context that wasn't so creative or original, but I think they did. But I remember the spot back from the Super Juniors match now, and I think they did it better. That's just a personal opinion. Your mileage may vary. Yeah, Muda did not ingratiate himself afterwards, dropping a gay slur in the post-match media scrum. Jokingly, but still, you don't say those types of things in today's society, much like you don't call him the Pearl of the Orient anymore, Jim Ross. That was a little problematic, but Nakamura got his tribute match and he added his working boots on, and that was good to see as well, because Nakamura hasn't had much to do in WWE. They brought over that his original violinist from the WrestleMania intro that he did. I thought that was cool. The sense of pageantry in Noah was quite strong, I thought. Yeah, no, I just...
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, sending these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived. And really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Enjoyed this match for what it was. It was a fun popcorn match for me.
There you go.
Your go.
All right. I guess we'll do. Let's do NXT.
Okay.
I've seen it right off the bat here. I thought it was real interesting at the end of NXT that Breakker got the upper hand on Grayson Waller here. Because they've been doing a lot of booking that would suggest that, like, there are heels on the horizon to face the champion next. But this little one-upsman moment for Breakker versus Waller makes me almost think that they might be doing a belt drop to Waller here.
It's to bring, maybe to bring Braun up.
Yeah, exactly.
It is interesting because it's like, well, Grayson's pretty much the best heel you have right now in the company,
and Breakker got so much over Waller here at the end of this that it almost feels like Waller has to win this match now. Like, or another way of putting it is, if Breakker beats Waller next week, the way Breakker kept his cool through the entire Grayson Waller try to get under skin thing, the Grayson Waller effect, and then beat the crap out of him. If he then beats him for the title, what does Grayson Waller have to do in this promotion?
Exactly. And it's probably, and Waller's not going to beat him clean, of course. He's going to find a way to trick him or whatever. But given that you've already fed JD McDonagh to one of the Creed brothers, I mean, the natural thing to me would be, you know, Julius Creed versus Braun. I think that'd be fun, but the Creed still aren't really heels. They're still kind of, I mean, Diamond Mine's still kind of in that, they're still baby faces. And
They're baby faces. Yeah.
But there's no, there's no threat to Braun in there that's logical other than Grayson Waller.
Well, Grayson Waller, I mean, you also have Carmelo. And they're kind of heating up.
Yeah, but they've now been paired up with Apollo and Axiom.
That is true.
I guess you could elevate Carmelo again after.
Dijak is a good threat for Bron Breakker.
Yeah, well, I think that might be the end game. I think Dijak. Yeah. Because then you can have. Because the problem in NXT is there's really nobody for Bron to work at underneath. And Dijak solves that problem.
Oh, God, that'd be a great match.
I'm kind of here for that. I gotta be
honest. I am too. Yeah, no. Let us pray.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, but it does. It was just an interesting little moment here because it's like the other people who have been kind of getting heated up for the title chase have all been kind of heel. So it's just interesting to see Breakker get such dominance over Waller.
Yeah, they've had some, I mean, look, they have some good and they have some bad in NXT. Most of it, but everybody has kind of something to do now. Like the women, again, I will say this, and we should take our victory lap where we can. JC Jane, obviously the standout of Toxic Attraction when it was a threesome, and now even more so now that they're still a duo.
Oh, yeah, no, she's the clear winner here with the Mandy Rose sort of dissolving.
She's cutting the promos for them right now, and she's great at it in terms of what the WWE wants out of a promo. I'm not saying that she's a great promo per se, but in terms of being able to read the lines that are given to her that are ridiculous, she's perfectly acceptable and actually pretty good at it, I think. Thea Hale is nonsense, and I love her. Although the most preposterous part of that whole girl fight segment is Alba Fire coming down with a baseball bat, like Brick Hanlon and Anchorman grabbing a trident and just getting bonked on the head by Isla Dawn like a geek. I howled at that.
Gotta love that Isla Dawn. Gotta love that.
Oh my goodness. You know, I like Carmelo a lot. I don't like this program for him. I think it cools him down way too much, to be honest with you.
I'm with you. I think that if Trick Williams needs to do stuff,
let him go do stuff.
Let him go do stuff. Exactly.
I want Carmelo to have that aura of greatness at all times, and I just don't. It feels like they're just.
Trick really doesn't feel like an addition to the in any meaningful way. And I think Carmelo works as either a heel or as a baby face, but without Trick, it's much easier to make him a baby face. And if you're gonna have like Grayson Waller as your champion here, which is potential now, Carmelo as a baby face going up against Waller could actually be a very interesting little program.
I would pitch this. I would pitch maybe giving Carmelo a little bit more of an arrogant flair and making Dijak his bodyguard as opposed to Trick. And you kind of reduce the party boy type of thing because everybody loves to party on this brand. That's what you notice. Everybody's going out celebrating. Everybody's going out clubbing, you know. Enofi and Blade.
The conflict is over how you party, right? Yes. Yeah, like in which way do you party?
And it's NXT high school all over again, to be honest with you.
But yeah, you could goth party like the way that Joe Gacy and all those guys do, like, you know, like they have their good little goth party and they're like, well, we don't like to go out and like go to the clubs because we're smarter than that. That's why we all hang out at Steve's house. And then you have like the nerdy guys who are like, no. If we just kind of like, you know, fake it until we make it at the clubs here, it's going to work out. And then you have the people who actually like really clubbing.
I do like the past couple of weeks, they've given Drew Gulak something to do. I think that's been a nice addition to the NXT roster, to be honest with you. That's a guy that should be on any show you can get him on because he's so versatile and he's so good as a wrestler and a trainer that he could be an asset to whatever roster you put him on.
Two notes on him. One, he looks like he's in incredible shape right now. And two, I think it was too early to turn him. I think I would have left it ambiguous for longer.
I agree with that. I like, you know, I think the Charlie Dempsey thing, I think it was a little too soon to put that out there. And then to go through beating, he beat Chase.
Yeah, he beat Chase.
And I, you know.
Right. No, I think they had an opportunity with Gulak and Chase to do a bit of a mini version of Cobra Kai with like the two schools.
Yeah, and he's done that in Evolve with Catch Point. I mean, he's good at doing these types of angles. I just think with WWE, they love to rush to the heel stuff real quick.
Yeah, no. I think
you have to know that we have to boo him, as opposed to, you know, leaving some doubt in there. It's like, why?
Right, right. No, and it's actually perfect to have them both be baby faces, but like, and then eventually you turn Gulak, but like, you need to do a couple of weeks where Chase loses his temper and it makes Gulak seem like the sympathetic figure because he's calmer and Chase is the hothead. Like, this is actually very similar to like the Cobra Kai stuff where it's like getting under what's his name? Danny's skin. Anyways, yeah. Point being, NXT. Shall we? Your turn.
Let us celebrate more stupidity. More incredible, unrepentant stupidity. You know, prison changes a man. And it has changed Dominic Mysterio from bad community theater actor to hardened criminal. I adored this segment. I have adored the ones on... I have adored all the segments of him trying to bring Rhea home for the holidays. I just think all of those have been great. But also, Dominic's totally a rat. He told us the way he got out of prison so quickly is he completely gave somebody up. I'm convinced of this.
I really enjoy how Dominic's like aesthetics keep adopting different wrestlers. So it's like a little bit of Eddie Guerrero, but now we've also brought in a little bit of Razor Ramon into this guy.
Yeah. So who else can we bring in on this? Nails.
Oh, that'd be, yeah, a little bit of DOA. I mean, you could always, classic Aces and Eights could be brought into this.
Well, that's another company, but okay. We can do a little Los Barriquas.
I didn't necessarily think that they wanted to revisit DOA. Considering,
yeah, not as DOA.
But yeah.
Do you think he got jumped into a prison gang in his 30 minutes in the holding cell?
That's, I mean, how did he get out,
Jeff? American Me or Blood In, Blood Out, starring Dominic Mysterio. This is what I want.
I just love, like, framing going to jail for a night, like, you know, like going to the drunk tank.
Going to the drunk tank is hard time.
Yeah, as prison, yeah.
Oh, we need lockdown Dominic Mysterio edition. My first day in. I looked for the biggest guy in the room.
He looks around and he starts talking to these guys. He goes, we got to get out of here, guys. We need a plan to get out of here.
We need a plan to break out of here. He goes up and he tries to punch a 6'5" accountant who's a white collar criminal or something. Hey, what the F, dude? I'm here on a DUI. What are you doing?
We're going to be out in 48 hours.
I posted bail. I'm just waiting for my ride. What are you doing? Come on, man. Don't show any weakness.
I have a plan.
All right, which one of you is going to be my bitch? He turns it into Oz. He turns the drunk tank into Oz, and he thinks that's what it is. We all need to join together to survive this. Hey, we're going to be out in 8 hours. What are you doing? Oh my god.
Turning into the Stanford Prison Experiment.
That too. I've seen things that change a man.
How quickly we revert to our primal selves.
I ate ramen noodles for a night. Yeah, year ago.
Alright, so Elias continues to be very good at these hardcore matches. I mean, like, you're never going to get me to, like, love these hardcore matches as, like, a premise or whatever, but I do like the fact that this guy's willing to beat himself, like, up pretty, like, rough and tumble for these matches.
He's a big dude. He's sneaky big. He's not the best, you know, technical wrestler in the world, but he is great in these. I agree with you.
Yeah, he's good. He's tough. He's sort of establishing, yeah, like a low-key tough thing, and I respect it. I really do.
I'm going to go over to Dynamite for a moment and a tale of two different segments, which are generally positive. I'm going to be nitpicky about. First of all, the Paige Moxley stare down / promo battle, etc. Overall, really good work by Adam Page. I just really, for me, I want somebody, number one, to do a run through of these segments first before we put it on television, because you can say a lot more with less on this. When he asks, are you cleared to wrestle? Well, and his response was like a 3-minute promo when all he had to say was, not yet, but I could be on like Tuesday of next week or something like that. Instead, he goes, well, you know, I'm going to go see a doctor. And after I see the doctor, if he clears me, I'll be able to go. It's just like, oh, my God. I know some people could say, well, why not clear him there? But the whole point was to keep them from fighting each other at that point. And I get that. But you had to basically just say, not yet. And you did that. And instead of using two words, you used 300. And it was driving me nuts. The other thing that drove me a little bit nuts, and I did love John Moxley's, like, I like John Moxley's rabid dog act for the most part, but the pacing back and forth while Paige is trying to cut a promo on him was driving me insane, because I just wanted Paige to call an audible, grab him by the shirt and go, you look at me when I'm talking to you. And then that would have forced Moxley to do something on the fly as well. And he probably would have grabbed Paige right back and screamed in his face, and it would have been such a hotter promo without that. But I'm getting distracted by Moxley just drawing focus when Paige is trying to cut a heartfelt promo about, this is why I'm mad at you. And I really didn't care for that at all. I'll stop there for right now. Any thoughts on
that? No, I think the only other thing I have to add for it is I find the Moxley Paige angle like a little confusing as to who's going to win now, just because of what's going on with MJF and Danielson, because I feel like MJF is going to make Danielson have to beat a member of Blackpool Combat Club or something.
Oh, I think the ending of the match is fairly predictable, to be honest with you. I think Paige knocks out Moxley.
Oh,
Moxley,
okay.
Goes on vacation for a few weeks.
Okay, so you think Moxley's losing this?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, all right. Well, then I think that one's fairly obvious.
Okay.
Here's my another note on Dynamite I have. Cargill should have lost in this match once Red Velvet walked out on her.
Yes.
I know she's quote-unquote undefeated, but that doesn't apply to tag matches. And this is exactly the time where you beat someone like this. They can lose in a tag match. It's like obviously going to have an asterisk. Like, yeah, she got beaten because Kiara Hogan and Sky Blue outnumbered her. And like, you know,
but it wasn't a singles match, so it doesn't count against the streak.
Right. And it doesn't mean that Kiara Hogan can beat Jade Cargill or whatever. But like narratively, it's infinitely more satisfying than Cargill then still overcoming the odds.
Well, Chris, let me even make it even more weird, because why is Kiara Hogan involved in the finish of this match at all when you're pumping up for a Jade Cargill versus Sky Blue match on Friday? Sky Blue needed to roll up one of these two, preferably Jade, to get the win to set up the match once Red Velvet left. It made everybody look kind of stupid.
Red Velvet's the focus, right? It's the Red Velvet betrayal that you care about.
And are we supposed to root for Red Velvet here or not root for her? Because while I think Red Velvet has improved greatly in the ring, while Jade has not, it still wasn't all that clear that we should be booing Red Velvet for rebelling against Jade, who gets star pops. She doesn't get good guy pops. She gets those star pops because people know she's a star.
Yeah, this is a mess. It really was. I just thought that, one, Sky Blue probably should have gotten the pin here, but two, once you have Cargill outnumbered, the other team has to win. She has to listen.
Let's praise the best act right now in AEW, in my opinion. Jay Lethal and Jeff Jarrett. These guys are fantastic. They are fantastic heels. They are fantastic reactioners. They are fantastic actors. Everything about that acclaim, everything about the promo on Friday responding to the Acclaim's rap dissing them was fantastic. Lethal got very angry and stormed off. Jarrett just did a slow burn and said, I'm going to end your career. I love that. I hated what he did on to promote on his podcast. That was stupid. But then we get to this match, and Jeff Jarrett is just so solid as a heel, as a mid-card heel who is there to elevate the baby faces and make them look good. He is just so great. He goes in there. He has his want, which he's going to go after Max Caster. So he goes there, slaps him, does a couple moves, tags in Jay Lethal, who does most of the work here. We get rid of, it drove me a little bit nuts that they let Billy Gunn in the ring to get his pop, and then they kicked him out, at least. That was a good thing. Kicking out Sotnam, I howled. I howled at the middle, at the double deuce, the referees, for throwing him out. Just this giant guy with fingers that are bigger than Bryce Remsburg flipping off them. The reversal of the thing, just watching Jarrett and Lethal react to getting quote-unquote screwed in the dusty finish was absolutely fantastic. Aubrey got her hometown hero moment, which was nice for her, I guess, if you want to get pops for referees, I guess that's how you do it. I like not noticing referees, to be honest with you, but I get it. I get why they do this. They love pushing Aubrey. But I loved everything about that Jarrett Lethal Dutt Satnam Singh combination all week. They were great to me.
Yeah, I think I was watching this match and I was just really impressed with Jarrett in particular. I think that he is really perfect for this role, and this is the most I've ever enjoyed Jarrett in sort of any role, I think.
Former host says that whole interaction when they reversed the decision, top five moment in Jarrett's career. Mr. Rob McCarron coming into my DMs and saying that. So, and that's his favorite wrestler. So I will take his word for it. But yeah, no, I really thought they were solid. It is your turn, sir.
All right. Let's see. What else do we have on this? I mean, like, look, I general note on the card here. I think that AEW, we have been critical about who is this show booked for week to week. For good or for ill, the answer to that question was very simple. This show was booked for Seattle. And insofar as it was a show booked for Seattle, I think it was booked very effectively.
I thought it was a good show. 846,000 viewers. So down a bit. But
yeah,
beat by everything NBA. So
yeah, right, right. that is a bit rough. Strickland and AR Fox, great match, great match. I didn't rewatch the Lucha Underground match. I reviewed it years ago, but I didn't go and rewatch it after watching that match. I had like a note to do that, and then I didn't. And then Darby Allin versus Samoa Joe. We liked this match the first time out. I think this also delivered as well.
Wasn't as good as the first one, but I really liked it.
Right. Yeah. And I'll feel you, but I liked it. Yeah. Maybe not as good as the first one, but like, it was good. And I don't know, like, I just like these guys as a feud. Like, and in this case, this is a situation where Darby Allin could be the champion, and now you can have Samoa Joe as the heel chasing the babyface. And that actually is one of the rare times where it kind of works just as well as when the babyface chases the heel.
I need a outside voice on something, because...
Okay.
No. Actually, I need you to tell me if I'm right or wrong on this.
Oh, okay.
Because this is a bone of contention about AEW this week. The Starks-Jericho match. The Ricky Starks presentation isn't working for me as it is some other people. Some other people are thinking he's coming off as a star. And I just think, like, in the middle of this match, when he's doing his poses with the arms coming out flailing, and when he's like grabbing his hair, like doing the head down thing. Number one, it comes off sports entertaining, and it doesn't come off very alpha to me. It comes off somewhat, for lack of a better term, effeminate to me. And I don't know if I'm right or wrong on that. There's something very, it doesn't feel like a star. It doesn't feel like something a star in a fight would do. Necessarily, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So
it feels like a mid-card fire up spot.
Ricky Starks does this thing with a number of his poses that I think is very unfortunate, where he moves into a side profile and it makes him look that like he is only 2.75 dimensional.
Yes. I think that nailed it. I think that nails it for me a lot of it.
Yeah. There's some other things that you could go either way on. Like, I get what you're saying about some of the other mannerisms or whatever, but like, for me, the one that I keep going back to is this side angle makes him look like very skinny. Very skinny.
That's the funny thing is I thought it made him look tiny, and then I saw him standing next to MJF, and he dwarfs MJF in some ways. I'm just like, my God, I didn't realize he was that much taller than him.
And I think that really does, it just hits home like what a bad particular mannerism that is. And I think if he moved away from that, I'm with you. It's, there is a Stark quality about Starks.
It's as a heel, not a baby face.
That might be part of it, but I also think that it could go either way. It just depends. It really is more about carriage and how he moves around the ring, how he carries himself. And right now, he still reminds me a lot of the presentation that he was doing when he was in NWA.
That's a good call. That's a strong call.
Wearing the vest and stuff like that. It doesn't, and that was very mid-cardy to me. I saw a certain aspect to him that, this is like a, above average looking guy, he has a certain star look to him, but he also is like kind of dressed like, gym wrestler.
And yeah, he has a nice egotistical promo, but then the bell rings and you're kind of like, okay, he's good. But he's not showing me like main event heel level good on NWA.
I don't think the spear does anything for him either. He's not a guy who I think
he's a smaller guy.
Yeah, also because this gets back to the 2.75 dimensional thing. The spear requires you to go completely lateral, and so it really sort of emphasizes his thinness.
I love the energy of the match, but old school Jeff is now going to come out to play a little bit. He's in the walls of Jericho. He gets hit in the head with a baseball bat. Not only is he not out, but I think they also decided to do a spot he wasn't aware of necessarily. Chris, in the old days, back in the day when you do a spot where you had a guy in a sleeper or he was out, if you lift the arm three times and it falls three times, that's the three count. It doesn't matter if you strongly bring your arm up after the three. And he did that. This was like Bobby Fish kicking out after the pin. And I was like, okay, they need to go over the history of that spot a little bit more if they're going to do that. Because it's like one, two, three. Oh, now I'm going to lift my arm up and be strong. I was like, no. That was the three count already. Hold on here. And I get that the indie type crowds are going to forgive that kind of stuff, but it's just me watching that going, all right, that didn't go as well as it should have right there. But yeah, overall, I thought, look, hot crowd, hot show. It was one of their better shows, I thought, to be honest with you, with the exception of that just god-awful Saraya segment where Tony Storm and Sheeta are sitting there and she was like, what the F?
Right. No, and then Tony Storm and Saraya continue this conversation as though it's not only just that Saraya had just chosen Tony Storm, it's that in so doing, it made Sheeta explode into 1,000 pieces and she was no longer in the room. It was so baffling that neither one of them could see the visible disgust on Sheeta's face.
My favorite part of that, Sheeta looking at Renee and Renee going, I don't know either.
Like, I mean, and again, it just sort of makes you hate Saraya and Storm.
Yes. These are your baby faces. What are you doing making them mean girls to the transfer student?
And it's like not even like Saraya's like being deliberately mean. It's like worse. It's that sort of like obliviously doing something that's really deeply hurtful.
It's you're beneath me. You should know you're beneath me. I'm going to go talk to my cooler friend over here, Tony Storm. It's like, well, hold on here.
No, I'm saying it's like one of the most sympathetic things, like for the person who's the recipient in this case.
Yes, and they're
where somebody says something really hurtful and they don't even realize how hurtful it is to you. So of course you sympathize with Sheeta, and you don't sympathize with Sarai. I think
they're gonna kill this by turning Sheeta heel. Oh my god, I can't believe she did this to her friends. And I'm like, hold on here.
I know.
Maybe she'll serve a day in prison like Dominic.
Prison really changes a person.
She'll come out with like the dirty pants suit. Like it's been like she's been sleeping on a bench all night, just whacking people with kendo sticks. Anything else, Chris?
From this week's wrestling. I don't think so. I think that's all I got.
I'll do a couple real quick hits. I do like that on Dark, they're now doing some smaller angles for guys that are on less. They gave Rohit Roja a nice promo, I thought. And they did a promo where Brian Pillman Jr. came to Arn Anderson and Brock Anderson for help after both Brock lost and Pillman Jr. lost. And it was the best promo Pillman's ever cut because he had dropped any facade of a character, and it was nice. And it was a nice little promo from him. So I'm liking those types of things. And I will give a plug to the queen of AEW Dark, Emi Sakura, because she is in her mid 40s and she is doing moonsaults, and nobody's watching her squash matches where she's just killing people. And she's great. I've been really enjoying all of her matches. She's had a run for the past 6 months, and she's had some bangers with Toni Storm. She's had some great tag team matches where she's just chopping the crap out of people. You give up that goofy queen gimmick where she's doing We Will Rock You type of thing, and she is solid. I like her a lot, even though she doesn't get a lot of play on the main show. But yeah, those are my only other things.
Yeah, I don't have other things.
Okay,
so, cool. Yeah, that's
go it. Enjoy your new town. This has been Shake Them Ropes. You can follow me on Twitter at CrabGame13. You can follow the show at Shake Them Ropes. We update every time a new episode drops. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Shows for every type of fandom that you can think of. A lot of Japanese wrestling. Stuff behind the Voices of Wrestling paywall. They gave instant reaction to Wrestle Kingdom out there over this weekend. If you wish to join that Patreon, we don't see any money, but we like the guys over there. Go help them out. Chris also has an Instagram account at Dr_Nove. That's the word Dr_Nove. Guitar lessons, moving updates, cats, all those other things. Chris, what are your plugs for this week?
I mean, you basically nailed it. Don't worry about the government. Might come back here at some point in the next couple of weeks now that I'm like settled in. And there has been enough news that I could easily fill an hour with bantering about the news on a light level. So be on the lookout. Maybe I'll tape it this upcoming week. Maybe I'll tape it the week after that. Who knows? Who knows? I'll announce it here. You'll hear it here first, and then you'll see it on patreon.com/DWATG.
I also have another podcast called The Dynamite Show. It's on the Fight Game Media Network for $5 a month. Myself and Paul Fontaine, about 10 minutes after Dynamite goes off the air. Hot takes, not reason at all. Just crap we haven't even thought about or thinking about. You can find that at patreon.com/fightgamemedia. For Chris Novembrino, I am Jeff Hawkins. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Do you like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the Pro Wrestling Quiz Show. I'm Joe Gagne, and every episode, I grill 3 contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.